Hi, everybody. How are you today? This is Mark Ciappardini. Thank you so much for coming back to the Ghost Seat Talk podcast experience. We are thrilled and delighted to welcome the next guest on the show. He is well-traveled. He's battled across deserts and the cosmos. And this space ace and tactical ops specialist is cinema's resident zombie hunter and mummy killer. An extraordinary voice actor. He looks good in battle or a three-piece suit. He's just a good-looking guy. So welcome to the show, this desert viper turned silver fox. Oded Fehr, welcome to the show. How are things in your world?
Wow, after that intro, my gosh, I'm blushing and I'm, good. Thank you.
Well, great. Grizzly Knight, I think it's funny to play something in a realm that you have no awareness. This takes place before you were born. I guess going back to 1967 in Montana, of all places, what was the vibe getting into a period piece like that? Like, what kind of mindset do you have to start with?
You know, I play a doctor on a movie and a father. And I think those are the two things that I was kind of concentrating on. The time period is definitely in the past, but you know, the moment in time that we're seeing is so full of energy and emergency that it's a period piece, but it's only a period piece to a certain extent. You know, that's not the main motivation of the movie. I played this doctor and he's actually created from the real story. Had two doctors that were involved in the event, and they basically combined them into this one character. And you know, I've played a doctor before. My sister is a professor of oncology, so I've spent a lot of time with her and her doctor friends and in hospitals and so on during research for other roles. And you know, doctors have a tendency of finding a way of separating themselves a little bit from the reality of the personal connection of the patient they're dealing with, just as a personal protection. Because if we felt for each person the way we normally feel, being as empathetic, you know, as a doctor, you couldn't continue working. You couldn't do your job. And so there's a disconnect, a certain amount of disconnect. But in this specific situation, being the doctor is on holiday with his family there, and his daughter is at the same age, basically, as the victim. I felt, you know, I have to find the balance between that disconnect and that kind of devastation or feeling of, you know, this could be my child, or my child has to see this you know, a situation that you kind of have to face the trauma.
Not only as a father, like with his family, but also in your position of employment, yeah, you do have to project strength and kind of focus. And so, you know, you look at casting somebody like yourself in literally any role, and there's a really great adage I like to think about where somebody says you don't question their legitimacy. And I think that there's sort of effortless sort of control and poise that you have that make you well suited for this and plenty other films and TV shows. But yeah, walking that
my
line.
My family calls it the resting angry face that works. I first realized that I have the resting angry face when I did Deuce Bigelow. And our fabulous director was coming up to me, and he was a little shorter than I am, so he's looking up, and he's so I'm thinking, you know, Antoine could do this, or he could do that, and blah 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 blah, and I'm standing listening to him, and he goes, or not, we don't have to do that. If you don't like it, that's fine. And I'm like, no, what? No, he says, 'cause you just look so angry, and I went, no, not that angry, just concentrating. So apparently when I concentrate, I look very, very angry.
You must make one hell of a deal on the car lot, to the point where silence is golden in negotiations, right?
I hope so. I don't know that that works. You know, they see right through me.
I always try to look through the lens of movie magic and practicality. And there's one question I have to ask about the there's you're carrying somebody on a door in the film, and you're keeping a conversation going as you're doing it. So, I know that you in your mind you have a script that you're running through, and you're like holding one corner of the door, and you kind of make it look effortless. And I'm just curious, was that difficult? Was someone else helping hold the door so you didn't have to put a lot of effort? I'm just curious about the makeup of that scene.
I don't remember that as being specifically difficult. The walk and talks are always a little bit more complicated because you have to figure out, unless the Steadicam is right there, you have to kind of figure out how to get your dialogue out in time before you run out of road. But I don't remember that one being specifically too difficult. Or too heavy either. It wasn't too bad. There were enough of us carrying the door and the girl, and it wasn't too bad. Yeah, I don't remember that specifically that specific scene as being too difficult.
Okay. It just in my mind, I was thinking of there's a Jerry Seinfeld bit where he talks about he goes whenever a man is driving down the road with a mattress on the car, instinctively there's one hand which is because that's going to keep it from flying away. So anyway, you do get a lot of back and forth with people who you're sharing stage with or a set, but I guess can you break down how it feels going to the world of voice acting and how you kind of get engaged even though you might just be by yourself in a booth, like what sort of pep talks or practices you keep?
I don't know that I do any pep talk or practice in the sense that I try to do my warm-ups with voice warm-ups, but I think always the secret of acting is reacting, and the key is to listen and understand and know what it is you're saying and what the meaning of it is. Doing the Destiny game, many times I would read the dialogue and I would have no idea what the character is talking about. And I would have the writers spend all time necessary to explain to me what it is that is actually happening. I didn't actually play the game. I don't play video games because if I would, I would never get anything done. So I only do the voiceovers, and so many times it's so complicated. I have no idea what's happening. But as soon as you do, as soon as you have a meaning, as soon as you know what the emotional background is, then you can give it the truth that it needs. I feel that way about everything. I remember when I was in drama school, that was the first time I kind of experienced it. We were doing a Jacobean comedy and we couldn't figure out what this one paragraph that my character was saying, what it was about. We just couldn't figure it out. Nobody knew, including our director. Our teacher said, "Look, just give it a meaning for you. Have it have a meaning for you. And as soon as you have a meaning behind it, the audience will understand it." And it's been true in everything. Sometimes it's very clear, sometimes it's very straightforward what you're saying, but sometimes you have what you're saying and you have an extra meaning specifically personally to your character that I like to bring in and maybe surprise the director, surprise the audience a little bit with something more, something that wasn't there originally, That's kind of the challenge.
Well, more to that aspect, what is a character that you felt most connected to or was able to put the most meaning to whatever they were doing or saying that just kind of stuck with you?
I try to do it with everything I do. I mean, I seriously try to do it with any character I play. Sleeper Cell, the show that I did for Showtime, that was written by Ethan and Cyrus. That show was specifically so well written. And the character that I played basically a leader of this terrorist cell in LA, was so developed that it really allowed him to be so scary. And he was so scary because you almost liked him. You almost appreciated and understood why he's doing what he's doing. That's kind of the wonderful thing about playing bad guys, because bad guys are not really bad guys. They're good guys as far as they're concerned. So they have the range of being really evil but good at the same time, you know. So it's always very very wonderful. I lost my train of thought and lost the question, but you know, we'll move on. I
No,
think that's
that's life.
that. Hopefully, that answered your question.
It really does. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of, when I like to think of the term audience surrogate. If there's a fish out of water movie, you can kind of imagine yourself
Right.
as an audience member in there. But I think it is impacting and really great writing, like you said, when you can sort of empathize with the bad guy, see where they're coming from. Because yeah, you're right. In
Yeah.
their world, they're not the bad guy. So.
Right. You were asking about the characters, which char the characters that you get to play, and the other one that's been really amazing is playing Admiral Vance on Star Trek and Discovery. Star Trek Discovery, when we first met Admiral Vance, I love that character, a character who is forced to make the best of bad choices. And that, you know, was a really fun and interesting character to play, a guy who is doing what he's doing for the betterment of humanity and the Federation, and yet he's having to make horrible choices where he knows people are dying, or people are not getting the aid they need, or and so on. And he's a very tortured character, and I really enjoyed playing that one as well.
Well, are there characters that you have a tough time shaking once shooting has wrapped? Because the reason I ask is I spoke to a director who said, I believe Luke Ford is an actor he's worked with, and he actually has a funeral for his characters after, or his character after the movie's over. It's a way to sort of put them away and not have to think about it anymore. And not like they're playing psychopaths or something, but is there someone who's just kind of like stuck with you and it just, ooh, I just can't.
I got to tell you, I went to a very classical drama school. I went to the Old Vic in Bristol. At the end of the day, I'm done. I am not. I'm a very not a very method actor. I mean, do I search for the emotions? Do I feel the emotions? Absolutely. Do I certain times need to separate myself a little bit from the day-to-day world around me in order to really be concentrated on living the character and so on? Absolutely. But to tell you that I go home and I'm still that character, you know, my wife and kids wouldn't stand for it. So it doesn't really happen.
Fair enough, fair enough. With all the things that go into acting, auditioning or having callbacks or getting, costume fittings, and is there one part of the process that, it may be arduous and difficult, but once you get to that one thing, it's like, yep, this is why I do it. This is what I love so much about it.
I think for me, it's the having this kind of moment with another actor, and you have this incredible scene that with each take you kind of find more of it, and it goes deeper, and you're reacting to each other like a fabulous tennis match. And it feels like every hit is like this perfect hit. You know, the ball crosses right over the net and lands perfectly. And then you know, that's when you go, wow, this has been really amazing. You're These kind of scenes are the scenes that you just hope that you never go, oh wow, this is going really well, or wow, they're really good at what they do, which happens to actors. Every once in a while you're so the scene is going so well that that half of your brain that kind of just does the technical stuff can't help but go, oh wow, that's good acting there, that person I'm talking to. And you go, oh man, it's my line, so
You get lost in the process. And I love hearing stories like that because I've seen a lot of films and a lot of dramatization where you'll have sort of a shot reverse shot, and when the focus is on the person who's on camera, it's like everything's on them. And I'm always wondering how much does the other actor need to give them to make that happen? Like you said, that perfect back and forth. Is there a time where you do you lean back and you say, you know what, I'm not on camera, so I'm not gonna give it my all? Or like how does that dance
Never,
work?
never, never. I'm incredible off camera. I mean, my best performances are always off camera. No, I mean, you never do that. It's, acting is a huge collaboration with everybody around you, including crew and everyone. And if you don't give it your all, every take. I mean, yes, when you're on a wide, you're not going to go and shed a tear until you're close up, but your emotional performance that you give the other actor for them to react to is always the same and more, And sometimes, there's certain actors that you're working with and you see that you might be able to help them a little bit more. And if you have that kind of comfort between the two of you, kind of a repertoire between the two of you that you feel you could do it, sometimes you add something to your lines to push them a little harder, maybe give them that surprise or give them the opportunity to have more of a reaction. It's very seldom that you do that because you don't want to throw anybody off. But acting is a hugely giving profession, and you have to give a lot in order to receive something to react to. I on Star Trek, I work with Holly Hunter, and Holly is so wonderful at the end of every scene, and it doesn't matter if you had one line or maybe even no line, but you are acting opposite her. She'd always come and give you a hug afterwards and thank you for being there with her, which I think is so, it's so important. We're not, actors are not on their own. They're not by themselves. And I think if they are, you see it. At least that's how I work anyway.
Well, let's go a little deeper on that with how you work. Do you like to I've heard some conflicting information about how sometimes if you do a read through, you kind of diminutizes the spontaneity of what could happen on the first take. I guess yeah, what's your approach on that?
No, I'm a huge rehearsal guy. Huge rehearsal guy. I love rehearsals. I love rehearsals. I love running lines. I don't think running lines and rehearsing over and over, I guess there might be a space where you might lose a little bit of the spontaneity, but you cover every shot so many times anyway. What are you going to do in take six, like, or the sixth setup? Like, all of a sudden you're not going to be spontaneous. You're not going to give the same performance. It's not going to be good enough. No, you have to know as an actor how to reproduce it, how to keep searching, how to go deeper, how to find something new there. No, I think doing a read through is fabulous because it allows you for the first time to hear what your other characters might sound like or what they might sound like within this moment. And of course, it's not, a read through is not it's not a full performance, but it gives you a tiny bit of a voice. It's a little bit of a rehearsal. It's a little bit of seeing the entire picture not just in your mind, not the way you just hear it, but hearing the other characters. And then, yeah, rehearsing, when you get a chance to rehearse before filming, it's a very special moment nowadays. You know, you don't get a lot of rehearsal time now. Piper Parabo, that I worked with on COVID Affairs, she loved running lines, and I loved running lines with her. She was so amazing, well prepared, and so giving, and it was it made it so that our scenes together were always so quick and bouncy and full of chemistry, because we found those moments together, you know, running lines. Yeah, I'm a big believer in rehearsals.
Well, I mean, if that's your MO, then it certainly pays off. And I love how the delivery of, again, this goes back to the legitimacy of the actor and your portrayal in Grizzly Night. You say, towards the end, you say, "She's too far gone." And it's just, there's a conciseness to it. You know, like you said before, you were trying to control what you were saying and be, remove emotion from the situation, but just how you delivered that in a concise manner. I wonder, is that your delivery? Is it the words? Is it the marriage? Did you have any input on how to, like, because it had to be a quick scene from what I could tell. It was like, you know, I had to convey the fact she's gone. So curious what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I mean, of course, it was I deliver the written lines, and that is how we rehearsed it, and that is how I felt was right at the moment. Again, you are reacting to the truth of the situation. You know, the way I work, I always say that it feels as though I have two halves of my brain working separately at the same time. There's the emotional part that is reacting, that is controlling the delivery of whatever is happening, the whatever emotionality is coming out. And then there's the technical side of things. There's the side that says, all right, you have to lean a little bit to the left here because you're being blocked, or your light is being blocked, or, you know, the camera's about to make a move, so get ready to turn, or you haven't hit your mark, or whatever it is, or, you know, don't forget to pick up the knife before you're doing it. And it's the combination of those two things that is constantly the kind of the balance. But acting is reacting. It's all, you know, the delivery of that line is that the reaction that I felt was right at the time to this girl is too far gone, and you know, the heartbreak of it. Again, rehearsal is helpful. Running your lines to the point where they effortlessly come out. You know, we don't tend to think too much before everything we say. You know, it's a you know, right now we're doing an interview, but having a normal conversation or living day to day, you don't specifically think about everything you're about to say. Sometimes maybe we should, but you don't think about every line before it comes out. Well, when you're saying lines that are not yourself, you are you want to have them flowing out in a very natural way. So the rehearsal is getting those lines down, and then the ability to just have them delivered in a reaction. You know, sometimes what I find with certain actors is that they get locked in on however they rehearse the lines. The key is to be able to forget that performance and then let yourself react to your environment. So, and not just give the same performance every time, but give the performance that is true to the situation, you know.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Well, let's pick up on two things you talked about. You talked about reacting and you talked about lines, but what if you don't have lines? And I'd like to ask just one mummy question, an Ardeth Bay question, if I can. There's the plane scene where you're on the wing of the plane And O'Connell just looks at you and goes, "How you doing?" And you have the biggest smile on your face. And I just, that's probably my favorite scene in the whole movie. And I just like, how did you
All right,
do
listen, this is a win and a failure at the same time.
it? Oh, do tell.
The win is that everybody loves this scene. Everybody loves the smile and everybody loves the reaction. The lose, the failure is the fact that I wasn't trying to smile. I was trying to be silently screaming, you know. And that's really the truth of it. So it's not even it's not I mean, I'll take it. I'll take it, you know, I'll take the win, but it wasn't at all what I was going for at the time. The only excuse that I have is that I was a younger actor and not as aware of what things might look like on screen. But yeah, it worked.
And it will live on in eternity. So,
Yeah.
Oda, this has been tremendously fun. It seems like you've got a great career, you've got a great attitude. People love you for numerous reasons. And I always imagine that if I'm traveling somewhere, I would want you looking after me from a hilltop, just
Ah,
like,
thank
just
you.
wishing me well. And so I wish if you had people in your life who could wish you well or do wish you well, who would those people on the mountain be wishing you on?
You know, the people that are my family, that's really they're the most important people in my life and the only people I really care to care about me and for me to care about them. And we are very, very close knit family. You know, my wife and I have been together for 25 years. We have three amazing children and then we have our family, extended family with our siblings yeah, we family means everything, literally everything to me. Far surpasses work and or anything else. So
Excellent. Well, that is the right answer, and this interview has meant everything to me. So, Oda, thank you so much for your gracious time.
thank you. So lovely talking to you, Mark.